Kate Remington. I'm talking with Michael Stern. He's the guest conductor for the Stanford Symphony Orchestra's performances on Saturday, March 9th, and Sunday, March 10th. And the program includes music by Schubert and Haydn and Mozart. And Michael, it's just wonderful to have a chance to talk with you.
I'm delighted.
I guess right off the bat, one of the things that I've been talking over with many of the Stanford Symphony's guest conductors is, what is it about the Stanford Symphony that is really drawing you to perform with them, and what are you really looking forward to with working with them?
Well, I look forward to the same thing that I would look forward to with any of the orchestras that I guest conduct, and that's making great music. And you go to places where you think you're going to have a musically, artistically, and personally fulfilling time, and the Stanford Symphony has a long tradition of fine players coming together for interesting programs, and it's a great chance to do a program of three incredibly essential works by Schubert, Haydn, and Mozart, especially the Jupiter Symphony. I mean, there are so many things to look forward to, but there's an added bonus for me, which is that I happen to reside these days in Old Greenwich, which is a hop, skip, and a jump from the Palace Theater in Stanford. So geography, for somebody who travels all the time for work, the proximity of the orchestra is very attractive.
I can imagine. And not only that, but you know not only the geography, but the communities that the orchestra serves, too. So that must be
advantage.
It's totally.
It's a sophisticated community with a discerning music lovers. But really, it begins and ends with what can happen on stage. And you've got a fair chance. You have all these players who regularly play everywhere in the greater New York, Connecticut, New Jersey area, and certainly, you know, we rehearse in New York City. So, I think it's a no-brainer. It's the group is so fine, and the program is so good. It's a recipe for a really enjoyable week.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. And the program itself is so interesting because the Schubert and the Haydn and the Mozart are all interrelated, and so how did this program come together? How much of a hand did you have in putting the program together?
I put the program together knowing that the Haydn Symphonie Concertante was on the table, but you know there are questions. When you make a program, I always try to find some kind of an inner logic, some kind of a red line that holds the pieces together, and I'm glad you mentioned that there is a connection among these three pieces, because it's true, but not necessarily the one that people would think. The obvious, on the surface, it's obvious that all three of these composers were big names in Vienna at the end of the 18th and beginning of the 19th centuries. But in a way, you know, we titled the concert The Path to Jupiter. It could also have just been easily The Path from Jupiter, because even though it's the culminating work on the program, it was the work that was sort of the instigator for the classical era's culmination, the apex of what the classical era was to be. I mean, Haydn composed after Mozart's death. Schubert was born after Mozart's death. But Schubert revered Mozart. He called him, you know, the immortal one. And in fact, this Fifth Symphony is modeled somewhat on at least the instrumentation and a little bit the form of Schubert's penultimate symphony, the Symphony No. 40 in G minor. Mozart wrote it in two versions, but the first version was smaller with only one flute and no clarinets, and so Schubert wrote this Fifth Symphony at the age of 19. I mean, it was a conscious homage to Mozart. And Haydn, of course, was one of Mozart's mentors, as he was also a mentor to Beethoven. But even though Mozart wrote this piece before Haydn wrote his Symphonie Concertante or Schubert wrote his Fifth Symphony, in a way, the most revolutionary piece on the program is this 1788 Last Symphony of Mozart, because it's something utterly astonishing. It's one of the greatest works of art in any genre that you can imagine. It's not just the highest culmination of the classical era. It's more than that. It's for the craft alone in the last movement, the counterpoint alone in the last movement, which has been endlessly written about, never fails to astonish. I mean, here Mozart is, in a sense, he's showing off because he decides not just three lines or four lines, but five independent lines of counterpoint, all running in and out of each other, upside down, backwards, bringing them simultaneously, parallel, contrasting in this absolutely stupefying form. And remember, Mozart wrote his last three symphonies, all of which are masterpieces, in 6 weeks in the summer of 1788. Just the facility alone for this 32-year-old guy who was struggling for money, trying to make it in Vienna. I mean, it's pretty astonishing.
And one of the things that makes them really remarkable is he didn't write them intending for them to be performed. It wasn't like he was writing a commission with these symphonies. He was just writing them for his own pleasure.
Well, he was writing them, you can say he was writing them for his own pleasure, but in fact, if you talk to composers, there are only two reasons why composers write music. Obviously, one of them is they want to get paid, but they write because they have to write, just like an author has to write books and a painter has to paint pictures. There is something essential to this music, and it was pouring out of him. You know, it never fails to amaze me, having studied manuscripts by a lot of composers in facsimile, and once in a while, when you're really lucky, you get to touch the real thing. And you look at facsimiles of manuscripts by Beethoven and by Mahler and all sorts of people, and their scratch outs and ink blots and revisions. And, you know, Beethoven was famously playing with different ideas and scribbling and scratching. And you look at a page of Mozart's manuscript, and there's not a mistake on it. And that means that he had all of this music. Remember, he died at the age of 35, and he has 563, opus numbers, Kerschel numbers, to his credit. And he had this music fully formed in his head before the ink ever left the quill. So there is that. And that kind of astonishing mind, that kind of genius, is stupefying.
Yeah.
And he did this regularly, right? It wasn't like, oh, he was lucky. He got a couple of good symphonies and the rest was sort of so-so. No. He's got one masterpiece after another. And if you look, honestly, you don't find a correction. You don't find a scratch-out. You don't find a mistake.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to see in London. I saw the first couple pages of the Symphony No. 29, and you're right. It's just it's like it came from the printer. It's just amazing.
That's right. That's right. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of other composers also. Mendelssohn famously was writing about his music and writing to his father and his sister, saying, "I have these pieces in my head. I already hear the end and the beginning." And so the fully formed construct of the piece was set in his ear, in his inner ear, and in his mind before he actually wrote it down. So Mozart wasn't the only one. He just did it better than anybody else.
It's really phenomenal. And I'm sure every time you return to this symphony, you find new things in it. So what are you looking forward to bringing out in your performance with the Stanford Symphony?
I mean, I have to get to know the orchestra, but there is, despite the fact that all of these pieces come from what you could argue is one of the golden periods of Viennese music. Actually, Haydn wrote his symphonic concerto in London, so it wasn't technically a Viennese piece, but Haydn was pretty much Vienna through and through. They are very different, each one. You know, there is this aching nostalgia and a little bit the Viennese good old days feeling to the Schubert. But remember that Schubert was an incredibly vocal composer. He was a songsmith and a tunesmith. And so that is the animating quality of a lot of his music generally, and certainly in this symphony. The playfulness of the solo quartet in the Symphonie Concertante is just another reflection of Haydn's creativity. I mean, I some people dismiss Haydn as being a lesser light somehow. next to Mozart, I disagree completely.
No, me too.
A miracle of invention. And the Mozart is something, again, different. The Mozart is wit, but it's also unbelievable energy. And the sheer craft never sounds technical. And so you are completely immersed and captivated in the power of this music because of what is at its core. It's not trying for effect. I mean, compositionally, he has these strokes of genius throughout. But it's really, you know, you get through the first three movements and you say, well, it doesn't get better than that. And then you come to the fourth movement and it gets better. So even though the sound world of all four of those pieces is somewhat shared, they, after all, were all written around the same time, Schubert a little bit later, but the affect and the tone of the music is a little bit in the same direction, they are actually coming from very different places. And so you want the character, especially of articulation and the intent of the music, to be specific to the piece and specific to the composer. You know, I've done Mozart's Jupiter Symphony with larger groups and smaller groups. The Haydn clearly was not meant to be played with a very large group. But remember that Haydn in London was delighted to have orchestras far bigger than he ever had back at home. So when he had his trips, which made him into a superstar, you know, his London symphonies were played by really big orchestras, which for the day was very unusual. And that makes for a different sound. Clearly, he had that sound in his ear. So if you look at the last three, four symphonies, they clearly sound different than the symphonies that he wrote in his middle period, because he was writing for different forces. So that's something to keep in mind, whether you're playing on period instruments or not. That kind of historical information can affect some of the choices you make.
Oh, definitely.
And the Schubert is just, you know, I always think, you know the word gemütlich?
Oh, sure.
In German, the Schubert Fifth Symphony is gemütlich music. Certainly the opening. It just sounds like, you know, he is totally in his element. It's Viennese elegance at its height, and there is this constant singing in Schubert, always, whether he's writing a song with lyrics or not. And that is a very different thing. I mean, Mozart was also a vocal composer. Mozart was a man of the stage, and he understood the drama of opera, for sure. He was a theater guy. But the Jupiter Symphony is not quite as operatic as some of his other pieces. He was writing instrumentally virtuosic music, and he knew it. And I also keep that in mind.
Yeah.
When I performed this piece.
Well, what's also interesting about Schubert's Fifth Symphony is that it was one of the first pieces he was able to write after he had left his father's school. So there's a kind of a joy in that symphony, I think, because at last he was able to just concentrate on music and really give it his undivided attention. And I think that really comes to the fore, really is very obvious in this Symphony No. 5.
Well, I think the other thing, you're absolutely right, but also remember that when he was feeling that elation of being on his own for the first time, he was still only 19 years old.
Yeah.
So let's leave aside the fact that it's an astonishing achievement for anybody, let alone somebody not out of his teen years, to have written this. There is this kind of young person's excitement, the abandon of being young, which you feel in this piece. And I think that's also a quality worth remembering, you know? I mean, Schubert never wrote an old man's piece. The poor guy died when he was, what, 31?
Yeah.
It is what it is, but there is still something, somebody who is exploring life for the first time in a place like Vienna. And he was not a retiring wallflower, Schubert. He had an animated circle of friends. But I think that kind of, I think abandon is a good word. That kind of abandon and joy is really intoxicating in that piece.
Mm-hmm. It just the way they all interlock and interconnect. It's just, it's a really interesting way of constructing a concert, because very often, and I know you do this too, playing contemporary music is a mission of many, many conductors and many, many orchestras. And certainly it's important to let audiences hear the music that's being written right now. But this is just such an interesting concert. So I'm really pleased that you were able to put these three pieces together.
Well, I appreciate that. I would push back a little bit on the idea of a mission, because a mission sounds like duty.
Oh, right.
You know,
yeah.
A little bit. But I don't consider... I perform music because I believe in the music. So whether it's with my orchestra in Kansas City or any orchestra that I would bring a program to as a guest conductor, if it's not music that I believe in, I find it difficult to perform it effectively. And I think there is great contemporary music, and I think there's uninteresting old music.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that to say, oh, you're so boring, you're only playing music by dead white guys from the 19th century, and to lump all of that into one category, saying it's no longer relevant to our time, misses the point entirely about music. Because what makes music great is the timelessness of that it can be relevant for any time, if you can contextualize it. And I often think that to perform contemporary music in contrast with older music makes both the older music and the newer music sound different.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think if the works are intrinsically excellent, then you don't have to apologize. Here you have three pieces that couldn't be further from contemporary music, and I'm certainly not apologizing for the fact that they're three masterpieces. So I think you have to be honest in the way you program. And I like I said at the beginning, I like the idea of having some kind of an internal logic and flow in the program, but that can sometimes incorporate newer music and sometimes not. And I think a really good program is always organic, and I think this one is, so I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, well, you should be, because it's a great program, and we're really looking forward to your collaboration with the orchestra. And Michael, thank you so much for taking some time to really dig in and do a deep dive into these pieces. Thank you so much.
I'm delighted to have had the chance, Kate. Thank you very much.